so suggestive.
There has never been a more obvious sound.
There's a huge edge to be gained by looking into things like this.
With the hype, it's only going one way. He's still too cheap.
How can you not love fantasy football?
How can you not love fantasy football? It is semi-final week. You are tuning in to the Fantasy Sanctuary and you are in the best place to run you through everything you will need for this week 16 slate of action. We're going to be talking redraft, DFS, and of course I'll be dropping some little dynasty nuggets along the way. Tom, hope you're doing well on this fine run into Christmas, run into the fantasy football playoffs when it all matters. We're going to start with the Saturday night games. It's a completely thrown my head out this week. We've got Christmas Eve games. We've got Christmas Day games. I can't get my head around what's playing when, but Cincinnati at Pittsburgh, 37 over under, two backup quarterbacks. Is this just going to be one that we're going to avoid, or do you think there's any sort of interest in this matchup?
I think if you'd asked us a couple of weeks ago, it definitely would have felt like a game which we completely wanted to avoid. But Jake Browning has made this a game which you can't really ignore. The Bengals just refuse to lie down and be done for the season, whether it's Jake Browning keeping them alive, even though their defense isn't up to playoff standards, isn't up to the kind of standards that we've had in previous years. And now they've lost DJ Reader, their defensive tackle, which opens this up to play into the one thing which Pittsburgh have done okay at times in recent weeks, and that's run the ball. So are we going to see Najee Harris, who between weeks 9 and 10 was a top 12 back, but since then was RB 41, 13, 24, 36, 73? Or are we going to see more of Jalen Warren, who, speaking of my best ball shares, I would love to have a Jalen Warren spike week right about now. We saw last week when Najee Harris fumbled the ball, the team were completely ready to put it in the hands of Jalen Warren. And if George Pickens had felt like blocking, then Jalen Warren would have had a touchdown and I would have been celebrating a lot more. I think the Bengals, they ranked 29th on run defense before they lost DJ Reader. So now the Steelers really should just be looking at this game and going, okay, we can really lean into this and run the ball. They're starting Mason Rudolph, Mason Rudolph's greatest contribution to the NFL so far has been getting hit in the head with a helmet. He is not an NFL caliber quarterback. He's not done anything of note when he has played. So I don't think you can suddenly start talking yourself into a situation where George Pickens and Deontay Johnson are going to be incredible. Deontay Johnson has scored 3 touchdowns in a row, which, given the kind of touchdown drought he had last year, is worth mentioning and celebrating. The Bengals are awful against the tight end position. They allow the most points across the league to the position. But Pat Freiermuth, after that game where he played with Kenny Pickett and they really opened up the middle of the field after firing Matt Canada, he had 9 catches for 120 yards in that game. Since then, he's had 9 catches for 63 yards, been the tight end 21, 25, 33. So I don't think you can really count on any of the Steelers' pass catching options. I'd start Najee Harris if I had to. I would start Jalen Warren if I was looking for a ceiling play. On the Bengals side, I think playing T. Higgins feels like a fairly safe bet with Ja'Marr Chase ruled out. I think Tyler Boyd isn't a player that I've got any confidence in. He's really done very little this season and just looks to be just heading towards the tail end of his career. I like Chase Brown as kind of like a real dart throw, but I don't think we can count on enough to start in any leagues unless you're playing in really deep leagues. And Joe Mixon's been pretty steady. So, yeah, hopefully Jake Browning plays well and we get a decent game. But in the AFC North, you're always just a whisper away from things turning ugly.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like this could eventually turn into a somewhat of a defensive affair. On the Chase Brown side, now, we talked about Chase Brown in May, in June, as one of my favourite sleepers. I talked him up a few weeks ago, and it feels like the hype is getting there now. I'm still viewing him as more of a 2024 play than a play perhaps this year. How deep are you? You said deep leagues. Are we talking kind of RB3 territory, or do you think he's still outside that top 36?
So he's been an RB3 in each of the last three games. His last three finishes have been RB30, RB10, and RB34. Obviously, RB34, you're talking like 8 PPR points. That's nothing to brag about. But we play in some leagues where you're starting two running backs and then you're starting three flex position players as well as your super flex. So like in those leagues, I've got no problem putting Chase Brown in, because we've seen over the last 3 weeks that the Bengals really want him to have a role. He's had opportunity shares of 25%, 29%, and 40%, which show that he's growing into this role and the Bengals are trusting him more and more. Where he still needs to catch up is that kind of stuff, you know, when TJ Watt is firing off the offensive line and coming towards Jake Browning, do they need a running back in who can pass protect well? And is that going to slow down how much Chase Brown can play? So I don't mind it. It's not something I'd be looking to do in more conventional leagues or even in DFS. I think unless you're playing showdown slates, the showdown slates on Saturday will be worth taking your dart throws at Chase Brown.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the T. Higgins splits with and without Jamar Chase. So with Jamar Chase in the lineup over the last 2 years, he's averaged 7 targets, 4.2 receptions, 12.7 PPR points. Without Jamar Chase, he's averaged 9 targets, 6.5 receptions and 18.8 PPR points, which is like high-end wide receiver one territory. So as long as you've got some trust in Jake Browning, I think fire up every single share you've got a T. Higgins, because I think he could be in for a big spike week. Looking ahead to the next matchup, feels like this could be, you know, the Buffalo Bills. They've rolled the roller coaster of this year, but the Chargers are reeling. Felt like they quit last week, quite frankly. And I feel like the Buffalo Bills could absolutely destroy them this week. Are you on board with that?
Yeah, I mean, what is there left for the Chargers to count on at this point? Keenan Allen's going to miss out for the second straight week. And you're left with Austin Eckler, who set season lows in both rushing attempts with 5 last week, rushing yards, 9, and his route participation was a season low of 41%. He didn't pick up a single first down against the Raiders. Like, the Raiders are they're a ghost of a team. They're just there for the good vibes and the fun times. But the Chargers are absolutely a team who have completely quit. They struggle massively defending running backs. Like James Cook had a career-high 27 touches last week, and we saw that the Bills were just ready to completely lean into him. They really haven't had anything going in the passing game lately. Stephon Diggs has had 5 straight games outside of the top 10, only 1 in the last 8 weeks. So part of me feels like the Bills have to see this as an opportunity where they need to get him going. As you can see on the screen there, the Chargers are the only team in the NFL who rank top 10 in fantasy points allowed to all 4 of quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. They haven't got anything out of Stephon Diggs lately. They've had very little out of Gabe Davis. Khalil Shakir, once Dawson Knox came back, has become completely forgotten. So the Bills need to see this as an opportunity to get their players ready for their playoffs or ready for the playoff push. And I think that they should really try to lean into Diggs on this one. But in terms of the Chargers side, there's just not really anybody I'd like to play. I have a semi-final this week where I've got Austin Eckler and I'm debating benching him for Deontay Johnson, which in itself doesn't feel particularly great. The one area where you can kind of get the Bills, though, has been with running backs. We've seen them struggle to defend against running backs in the passing game as well. They've given up lots of receptions. They just placed one of the defensive tackles on IR today. So that is an area where they're slightly more vulnerable. But I just can't trust Austin Eckler to do anything at the minute. And I think if you're going into a game in week 16, you need to be able to trust your players. You need to be going, okay, I can either trust this player or I'm playing them because of their ceiling. And Austin Eckler, we've just not seen any of that ceiling any time recently.
And I think that the Chargers, look, the season's done, okay? This season's over. Justin Herbert's not coming back. We've got a new head coach, new GM. They're now in that case where, right, what can we assess what's going to be around in 2024 and beyond? Well, Austin Eckler's a free agent. Austin Eckler's up there in age. They're not bringing him back. So what are they achieving by rolling Austin Eckler out? Why don't they give Josh Kelly, Isaiah Spiller, some run, and see what they've got in them. Because, yeah, they're probably nothing, and you're probably not going to build anything around them. But there's a chance they could show something. So I've got a lot of calls wrong this year, but calling Ostlecka as a non-top 12 back this year is definitely one of my strongest takes so far. A conversation that I genuinely never thought we'd be having, Tom. Last week, Josh Allen completed seven passes. Okay. We're now in the semi-finals. In super flex leagues, you have to start Josh Allen. In one QB leagues, if the Bills are just going to dominate the Chargers and run the ball all day, are you nervous that Josh Allen could cost you in your semi-final matchup?
No, because the way that Josh Allen's played in recent games, I mean, you go back and over the last eight games, Josh Allen has scored a rushing touchdown in all but one game. And that was against the Jets, where things get funky against the Jets. But Josh Allen has been a steady, he's been the most reliable quarterback option there is this year. His quarterback finishes over the last eight games, QB 4, 2, 5, 15, 6, 1, 9, and 16. So finishing as QB 16 against the Cowboys, I would have assumed that was in the realm of outcomes, possibly regardless, because the Cowboys' defense have been so good. I don't think the way that things play out against the Chargers, we're going to see that. I mean, the Chargers allow the fourth most fantasy points to the quarterback position. They just struggle against anyone, really, because they're just not a good defense. I mean, their top players haven't played well. Derwin James is somebody they poured a lot of money into, and he looks bang average at absolute best. And you start thinking, okay, well, if Josh Allen's running, who's stopping him? And Khalil Mack is probably the only defender the Chargers have who's played well this year. And I can't imagine.
And even he's been boom bust. He's had some shocking games. He's had some phenomenal games, but he's had some shocking games mixed in as well.
Massively. I mean, you take out the game against Aiden O'Connell and all of a sudden his stats look much more pedestrian. But Josh Allen, I think Josh Allen needs this kind of get right game as much as anyone. It wouldn't surprise me to see Josh Allen sitting on the bench by the fourth quarter. But I think by the time that he gets to that situation, he's going to have done enough to, at least deliver you an average Josh Allen performance.
Makes sense. And Rob in the chat on this matchup is asking, Josh Palmer in the flex with Keenan Allen out, would you start him over Tyjae Spears?
I would start him over Tyjae Spears. I really like Tyjae Spears this week, and we can talk about that when we get to that matchup. But I think I'd just lean Josh Palmer because he's the only good wide receiver we've got.
Yeah, I've got Palmer over Tyjae Spears this week. If, like Rob, you want to get your questions answered, get them in the comments below. We will answer 100% of the questions whilst we are live. We will answer 100% of the questions afterwards via the text. Get them in the comments below. Tom and I will answer them all week long as we head up to the week of matches. The juicy matchup of the, I want to say Sunday slate, but as I said earlier, I've got my days all confused. But the juicy matchup, Detroit at Minnesota, big high over under at 47. Now, this feels like this could be one that you are building plenty of stacks and plenty of lineups around for DFS this week, Tom.
Yeah, obviously, this would be the kind of game that if Kirk Cousins was playing, it would just be, everybody would be targeting it. I think you could easily say this would be like a 51-point over-under if you had Kirk Cousins in there. As it is, we kind of saw enough from Justin Jefferson last week. We saw enough from Jordan Addison last week where it's like, okay, well, yeah, there's probably a good chance that this game can still be fun. I mean, the Lions, they got back on track last week with 42 points over the Broncos, and we're kind of starting to see how they see themselves as a playoff team at this point in the year. Jahmyr Gibbs is never going to have 90% of the work. He's only getting the kind of 15 plus touches or so consistently, but it's working for them. And where this game comes back to for me for the fantasy value, the Vikings, they blitz a league-high 44% rate, and so much of that is going to dictate whether Jahmyr Gibbs is in the game or whether David Montgomery is in the game. How much is Jahmyr Gibbs being trusted in pass protection now when a team is sending all their blitzers at you? or is that going to mean that David Montgomery's in there? Because what the Lions could be trying to do is actually get quick passes to beat the blitz near the line of scrimmage. And if that means that we've got to play David Montgomery more and he ends up catching those, then it's going to be a really difficult day for Jahmyr Gibbs. But I like both. I think I'd possibly lean towards Jahmyr Gibbs because this is a high over-under, and I think that his ceiling is fantastic. You know, you look over the last few games and he's been rushing the ball much more effectively. I think you go back, he's at 226 rushing yards in the last three games. So I have more faith in him now than I did. Then on the other side, what does Ty Chandler do after last week having a career-high 26 touches for 157 yards, touchdown? He had 5.7 yards per carry, easily outperformed anything Alexander Mattison has done this season. He's going up against the Lions' run defense, who allow the fewest fantasy points to running backs. But the two biggest performances they've allowed this season have both come since week 10 to Austin Ekeler and Alvin Kamara. And we already talked about it with Austin Ekeler. He looks pretty washed, but he managed to get there against this Lions team. So can Ty Chandler get there? I think I'll play him in DFS because he's only 5,600. I imagine he's going to be quite popular, quite chalky this week. One other thing that's kind of a note with the Lions offense is that Jameson Williams ran a season-high 72% route participation last week. It really does feel like, okay, he's never going to get to be trusted in the same way that Amon-Ra St. Brown is, or he's possibly never going to develop into a guy like Ja'Marr Chase or, you know, one of these wide receivers who've been drafted really highly and changes a franchise's fortune. But it seems like he's established a role and he's leapt Josh Reynolds now as the wide receiver too.
Yeah, I think that with the Jameson Williams, this Lions offense needs a spark, which feels a ridiculous thing to say when you think they've got Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam Laporta, but it feels like they need that kind of bit of oomph. And I think that's what they've realized. And that's why we're seeing Jameson Williams work more and get more work, because they know that when it comes to playoff time, they can't just rely on being a nice, solid offense with Jahmyr Gibbs as your explosive weapon. They need that extra bit of oomph. And I think that's why they're trying to add in Jameson Williams. On the Ty Chandler point, I'm really excited to watch this because I think that he is such an explosive athlete. He's not the kind of player that's, you know, yes, last week he got 26 touches and was amazing, but he's not going to need 20 touches to potentially have a really good fantasy day. He's the kind of back that could potentially get there on 10, 12 touches because he is so explosive. You know, he's like a 95th percentile athlete. He's got that home run ability every time he touches the ball. So yes, it is a potentially tough matchup against Detroit. As you said, they're allowing the fewest fantasy points to running backs. But I think Ty Chandler's the kind of guy, particularly if Mattison's out and he's going to get that workload, he could break one and take one to the house at any point. The next matchup we're going across to Indianapolis at Atlanta. We have got a new quarterback in Atlanta, Tom. Does that change anything for you?
Not really. I mean, the decision to go back to Taylor Heineke was confirmation that Arthur Smith is absolutely sweating his job, and rightly so, because you don't make that decision. He went from Desmond Ridder to Taylor Heineke, realized Taylor Heineke wasn't the guy, then went back to Desmond Ridder, and then now is benching Desmond Ridder. Any head coach who had job security wouldn't have done that. They would have accepted what they'd made the decision on. They know that team players aren't going to have any respect for decision-making processes like that. And now he's done that. And I'm back in on Bijan Robinson this week. We've seen, yes, last week was painful when he fumbled and then he didn't get another touch after that point for the rest of the game. But what we've seen from Smith, he likes to push back against fantasy football and the big media talking about how he isn't using Bijan Robinson enough and stuff. But if you go back to last year, when people were upset about Kyle Pitts' usage, quite often he'd talk about how, you know, it was situations, blah, 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 didn't call for it and everything. And then the next week, in the opening drive, Kyle Pitts would get like three or four targets before then fading into nowhere again. He does seem to sneakily feel the need to try and get things right. And I think that you look at what the Colts have done this year. They've allowed the third most fantasy points to running backs. They've allowed seven games of 17 plus points to running backs, including Chase Brown, Joe Mixon, and Derrick Henry in the last 3 weeks alone. So this feels like a get right spot for Bijan Robinson. I appreciate not everybody feels the ability to put as much faith in it as I do. I'm definitely not feeling confident, but I've got an FFPC best ball team where I am the only team in a group of 12 to have Bijan Robinson, and it feels like it could really be a difference maker there. I don't
trying to talk it into existence, Tom.
You know, got to believe it. I don't really have any kind of faith in Drake London, because when we saw Tyler Heinicke in the starting lineup, he had a 55% completion rate this year. And on the other side, I think everything kind of hinges on Michael Pittman. Since Brock Purdy cleared concussion protocol in the space of a week, there have been more and more cases where players are clearing it quicker. I think that if Michael Pittman gets back out there after taking such an egregious hit like he did, then from now on, we just assume everyone can clear it and get back within a week. Michael Pittman, I would worry about him a bit, because we've seen the Falcons be able to dedicate coverage at time and take away teams' top options. Alec Pierce, one top 45 weekly finish. Josh Downs, I mean, it's just been pretty blah.
Disappeared.
The whole. He's disappeared. He had a couple of nice... had a couple of nice games. The game in Germany where he was kind of injured a bit. And then it's just not really been there. But if Jonathan Taylor's healthy, I'd absolutely play him. Some of his quotes this week talked about how he was a bit concerned about how he'd be able to work in the pass protection role. So it might be a little bit too thin to play him in cash games. But for tournaments, I think you could absolutely play him, because the Falcons have struggled against running backs catching the ball this season. But generally speaking, this one kind of comes back to Bijan Robinson and not a whole lot else for me.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting if Pittman plays. Obviously, we talk about Atlanta taking away those number one options. I think Indianapolis is almost a slightly different beast in that they rely so heavily on RPOs. They're on RPOs at the highest rate of the league. Michael Pittman leads the league in first read rate on RPOs. So it could be that AJ Terrell's almost would struggle to take away Pittman, because it's not a normal passing route.
That's a great point.
In terms of it's a lot of drags, it's a lot of slants, it's a lot of quick get the ball out, because it's not a traditional passing route. But that being said, I still struggle to see him clearing concussion protocol. And yeah, if he does, fine. If he doesn't, I don't think I'd want to start any piece of this passing offense. You know, yeah, Alec Pierce, somebody will probably be talking him up, but let's be honest, he's just out there to get his cardio and go home. There's no point to him actually being a receiver. He just runs deep every time.
So, I mean, Alec Pierce has been one of those players, but like, I think unless you're watching Colts games, you probably don't realize how much he's on the field. But he averages a 94.5% of the snaps. He is out there constantly. His route participation averages 94.5%. Like, he played 100% of the snaps last week, but it just doesn't matter whatsoever. Like, even when he'll come in with weeks where he's got like a 15% target share, which in some offenses you can get by on, but on the Colts, it's just not really much of a passing game outside of Michael Pittman that it really matters. Like, Alec Pierce is just one of those players that people want to talk themselves into happening. But in this iteration of the Colts, it's just not going to be worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a yards per route run rate of 0.84. The only guys worse are Marcus Valdes-Scantling, Allen Robinson, Terrace Marshall, Van Jefferson. Like, it's not exactly great receivers that you're putting in that sort of territory. So
there's a lot of players there that wasted breath has been spent on.
Exactly that. Jonathan's in the chat, though. He's got a question for us. This is quite a tough one, I think. Sit one out of Walker, Barkley, Chandler, or Singletary. Full PPR with an extra 0.2 points per rush.
What's your lean on that? Just give me one second.
For me, how I've got it ranked is Walker would be the one I'd sit. So I've got Chandler is the smash play, which seems a ridiculous sentence to say right there. I've then got it ranked Barkley 19, Singletary 20, Walker 23. So, yeah, it's close, but I would sit Kenneth Walker.
So I was just pulling up my DFS deep dive article, which our Discord members get, because just before we jumped on, I wrote up Kenneth Walker. And the reason I did was that last week he had 22 touches to Zach Charbonnet's 4. But also, this Titans run defense, that's what we've been known for all season. But last week, they allowed 170 yards to Devin Singletary. And the week before that, they allowed Devin Achane and Raheem Mostert to combine for about, I think it was 172. So I think I would just lean to Walker over Singletary, who's playing the Browns this week.
Yeah, I think it's close. It's probably not the most helpful answer that we've given you different responses there, Jonathan. But hopefully we've given you the information that you can make your own decision. Lewis is back. So he's saying, he's just asked us a question in Discord. Sorry, Lewis, we couldn't answer it. We're live. But he's asking, would you sell Cooper Kupp for a 25 first, having just been knocked out of the playoffs? For me, I probably would. I'd try and get a sweetener on top before saying that, though. I think maybe that's a little bit light. So maybe I'd try and get, whether that be a second or maybe a couple of thirds, something like that thrown in. But if that is genuinely the best you can do and you have asked every single owner remaining in the playoffs, maybe I probably would pull the trigger.
I feel like I probably don't have a good answer here because I was so high on Cooper Kupp coming into this season. I know Lewis, being a Rams fan, probably has Puka Nacua on his roster, which is making it easier for him to sell him. I just think that there might be another good sell window for Cooper Kupp at some point. And if it means waiting another week towards the finals, there we go. He's got Puka and Kupp. I think if you know the league and you know that's probably the best you're going to get, then I would take it. But if you feel like in a week's time, if one of these rosters in the semi-final looks a little bit flimsy and could come back to you in a week needing a little bit more, then I'd possibly just wait out another week.
Yeah, I think if you're either selling Kupp now or you're having to hold him until August, because we know that every off-season, everyone in the dynasty world becomes complete ageist, and we know that his value is going to plummet. So I think that if you're not selling him now, you're basically saying, right, I'm waiting until August, September time when we get into redraft mode and kind of go from there. We talked about Tennessee earlier. Seattle at Tennessee. You dropped some nuggets of wisdom about Kenneth Walker already. Is he the one player that you're particularly eyeing up in this matchup?
Yeah, so when I initially went through and created my player pool of players I wanted to write up this week, Kenneth Walker wasn't in there because you see the Titans and you go, okay, well, Tennessee have been good against the run all season. You know, they've been a pass funnel defense. But then when you kind of look at the most recent game logs, the fact that they do rank 27th in pass, the fact that they rank 11th in run defense DVOA, it doesn't really tell the whole story because of those most recent weeks where they've given up 170 yards to Devin Singletary, 170 yards to the Miami duo. And you go, okay, well, if the Titans, a team who've got their flip-flops on already, they're already starting to think about the offseason. You know, we saw last week that they are completely ruled out of the playoffs now. What motivation do they have left? Is Derrick Henry really trying to break any kind of career records at this point? I mean, if I was Derrick Henry, I would be knocking on the GM's door and asking for my release so that I could go and sign with a playoff contender. You know, if he wants to come to Baltimore, I think he'd look perfect in purple. And it is a good matchup for him against the Seahawks because the Seahawks, their run defense ranks 21st. They've allowed the 7th most fantasy points to the running back position. Seahawks have been fairly good against pass-catching running backs, which kind of gives you a bit of a ding against Tarjay Spears. But Tarjay Spears in recent weeks, he's kind of seen much more volume than he was earlier on in the year. He's had double-digit touches for 3 straight games. So I think, you know, if you've got Spears or if you've got Henry, I think both are kind of startable. What we've seen from Spears is that he's been a fringe RB3 kind of territory for the last few weeks. In terms of DeAndre Hopkins, what's he going to look like? Because it sounds like we're going to get Ryan Tannehill this week. Obviously, Will Levis suffered an ankle injury last week. And with Ryan Tannehill, what's DeAndre Hopkins going to look like? Earlier in the season, he averaged 10 points per game with Tannehill. Then it spiked all the way up to 15 with Will Levis because Will Levis was letting the ball go deeper, even if he wasn't incredibly accurate all the time. So I'm a little bit concerned that DeAndre Hopkins might see a bit of a dip this week. But on the Seahawks side, this is the perfect matchup for Geno Smith to come back to after missing a game. Like, the Titans, they just are not a good pass defense. I think you look at what Jackson Smith and Jigba has done. He's been a top 30 wide receiver twice in the last five games, which isn't amazing. But we've established a floor with him now. The ceiling hasn't really come, but he's got enough of a floor where we're like, okay, every week we know he's probably going to be in that sort of wide receiver 30 to 40 range. And that's fine as a flex play in a lot of leagues. DK Metcalf's looked pretty good. Tyler Lockett is the one player I have a bit of concern about because he's averaging 7.2 targets per game, but he's just not really doing anything with it. So, yeah, I think this one feels fairly straightforward, but you know who you're going to want to start in it. Zach Charbonnet isn't startable because Kenneth Walker just looks better and is getting the majority of the touches. And then, ideally, you're not starting any of the tight ends in this match.
No, absolutely. Avoid all of them. Chigga Conquo, he had a little flash a few weeks ago, but I think he's back to roster clogger territory at the moment. The Derrick Henry piece. Oh, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, Conquo also with Tannehill this year was pretty terrible. All his best games have come recently where over the course of the last three games, he's had 45 yards, 64 yards, 46 yards. You go back and look earlier this season with Tannehill and it was 0 yards, 35, 7, 29, 36. Like, those aren't usable weeks. Whereas the last few weeks, tight end 13, 9, 17, those are kind of fringe startable weeks in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, I think there's better upside options than looking at Chig Conquo this week, though. But on the Derrick Henry point, I can't make up my mind where to rank him this week. He's the hardest player to rank. And basically, it comes down to two things. Do the Titans want to give him a farewell? You know, he's been a great player for them. Is this his final kind of, we're going to give you 25 touches. This is your farewell game. Go and run the ball to your heart's content, and then we'll let you go in the offseason. Or have they, as you said, already got their flip-flops on and are looking to 2024? And are they saying, right, the future is Tajay Spears. Let's give him the rock and see how he can go. And I could absolutely see both scenarios happening and I can't work out which. And basically, I've got Derrick Henry in my home league. And I know that if I start him, he's going to get no points. And if I sit him, he's going to go off. So, yeah, it's just one of those.
Well, he had 20 touches last week and he managed 10 total yards. So...
What was it? It was minus. Yeah, he had minus 21 yards before contact last week on 20 touches. Like, it's absolutely wild how bad that offensive line is.
Yeah, but, and it's definitely worth mentioning that, like, you know, last week was a disaster, but in the three previous games, he had two touchdowns in each of them. Like, he was RB10, RB4, and RB11. So we understand that there's definitely not the ceiling it once was, and Dehembe doesn't hit as hard as it used to, but that we know what the better outcomes look like for Henry right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Jonathan's back with another question. So he's asking, you need to sit one between Kenneth Walker, Montgomery, Aaron Jones, Tychana. That's sit David Montgomery for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's scenarios where David Montgomery turns out to be the better Lions back this week, but I'd be more comfortable playing him in DFS tournament lineups than I would be in kind of any managed league format.
Yeah, makes sense. And welcome in, David. Nice to have you. And Wonky Penguin, one of our members, she's back. Are we really starting Bijan? Rewind about 10 minutes. Tom talked about it. Tom's all in on Bijan this week. I think that's safe to say, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Bijan saw 2.6 more rush attempts in games with Taylor Heinicke compared to the games with Desmond Ridder. He rushed for 69 yards per game with Heinicke compared to 53 with Ridder. I think, you know, the Colts matchup is absolutely one which I'm fine shooting for upside on.
Yeah, and we're talking about bounce back games, and could there be a better bounce back opportunity for Jordan Love than going up against the Carolina Panthers, who looked feisty last week? But yeah, let's just be honest. The Panthers are terrible. The Packers are going to absolutely smash them, aren't they, Tom?
Well, you say that, but like the Panthers, they have this kind of habit of sucking the air out of games for fantasy purposes. So in terms of fantasy points allowed, they allow the fourth most of running backs. So that's something which anyone who's watched this channel knows. We've banged on and on about it this year. And they're particularly vulnerable. They give up a lot of rushing touchdowns. Nobody allows as many rushing touchdowns as they do. But they allow a league low fantasy points to the quarterback position. They rank 29th to wide receivers and 27th to tight ends. It's just they are not particularly vulnerable against any of those. In DVOA, they match up pretty well across the field. They don't rank well against wide receivers. Wide receiver ones, they rank 25th there. But then they're ninth best against wide receiver twos, second best against wide receiver threes. Pass catching running backs, they are the best team in the league against them. And part of that comes to game script. And we know that teams can just run on them and do what they want. But part of it comes from they just do have a few strengths that occasionally they play into. I think that I'd be completely fine starting Aaron Jones. Yes, last week he had 17 touches and he only managed 10.9 points. But this is like the nut matchup for that. Jaden Reed, he's at 18 targets in his last two games. If he plays, I would be playing him. I think Romeo Dubs has shown just really a lack of fantasy viability. You know, he's averaged 7.9 PPR points over his last 10 games. It's really, he's a decent NFL receiver, but he's not a good fantasy receiver.
He stopped getting open. His burst in and out of cuts is non-existent. The only way he's putting up fantasy points is basically boxing up defenders in the red zone. I don't know if he's got a niggle, if he's got an injury, but if you put on the tape, he can no longer separate, basically.
Well, I mean, speaking of people who can't separate, well, let's just transition over to the Panthers side. Adam Thielen. Like, I spent a bit of time today looking at player performance pre and post bye weeks. And for the Cowboys, they're a team who, after the bye week, they've all had this massive uptick. Then you look at Adam Thielen, 8.2 yards per target pre-bye week, 5.5 since. And he just hasn't been the same player. He hasn't been able to get open. He hasn't been able to be particularly fantasy viable. He hasn't been a top 20 wide receiver since the bye week. Meanwhile, Jonathan Mingo is a player who keeps getting targets, but he isn't startable because the Panthers, they just don't score passing touchdowns. And if nobody on an offense is getting passing touchdowns and the volume isn't particularly sustainable, then in PPR formats, I mean, you're dead. In standard formats, if you're playing that, then you're completely dead. You have to be able to deliver on some sort of high-value stuff. And Chuba, for me, is the only Panthers player I would consider playing this week. He's been a top 30 running back in all but two games since week six. We've seen that he is by far the preferred option of Miles Sanders. And the Packers, they haven't been particularly good against the run. They've allowed the ninth most fantasy points to the position. In run defense DVOA, they're ranked 26th there. Their defense is something much maligned now. Like, a lot of Packers fans are calling for the defensive coordinator's head. And I think that's something which we'll see probably in 2 weeks' time. But yeah, this one for me just comes back to the running backs more than anything.
Yeah. And I think on the Mingo point, look, I don't think we can get over how bad a rookie season it is. He's the only player, well, he of players with 75 or more targets this year, he's last in yards per route run. He's at 0.88. The next lowest is Elijah Moore at 1.12. Like, it's not even close. He is such a bad route runner. He cannot separate. He cannot get open. It's just not helping Bryce Young. The one question I've got for you, though, Tom, we saw last week the Packers basically completely vacate the middle of the field. I don't know what their linebackers and safeties were doing, but they basically said, Chris Godwin, you can eat as much as you like in the middle of the field and we're not going to try and tackle you. Does that open up a world where Adam Thielen, who we know operates out of the slot heavily, we know likes that intermediate space, could, am I overthinking this, or could it be a Thielen spike week because of that?
I think it's just tricky because you go back and early on in the season, you look at things and Adam Thielen started the season with a 3-point game, then followed up with games of 20 points, 31, 15, 27, 28, 15. And then he hit the bye week and he's really struggled to deliver. Like, he's had games of 15 points is like the absolute most he's had since the bye week. He's had two games of where he's had over 45 yards since the bye week. I just think that three games over 45 yards since the bye week. And I think he is just feeling his age and I think he's really struggling with it. And even if he gets there in a PPR format this week, it might be a bit ugly. At 5,900, I could understand that kind of dart throw on DraftKings. You know, you go back, it was only a few weeks ago you were talking about him as an 8K receiver on DraftKings. And I kind of get it, but I just don't think this game is going to put up enough points where I would want to play him in tournaments where we're seeking out that kind of real ceiling potential.
Yeah, and David's back in the chat. You were talking about Chuba. He needs to decide between Chuba and Breece. This is still Breece for me. Breece, top 10, great matchup against Washington.
Yeah, I think I would lean towards Breece and probably assume that, you know, you're talking 3 or 4 points more in favour of Breece Hall this week.
Yeah. The next matchup, though, Cleveland at Houston. It sounds like we're potentially going to get no CJ Stroud, but we could get Nico Collins. Does that change how you're approaching this one?
Not particularly. I think this game, the 40-point over-under feels a little ambitious to me. I know we saw Case Keenum come in and be fairly reasonable. And what we've seen from Joe Flacco is the Browns are going to be far more pass-heavy than anything we've seen. You know, Joe Flacco's 133 pass attempts in the last three by far leads the league. I don't think anyone else is over 120. And Flacco has gone over 300 passing yards and had multiple touchdowns in back-to-back games. That's something that Deshaun Watson hasn't done since 2020. The Texans, they allow the 10th most fantasy points to the quarterback position. But I just don't really see this one having the same kind of shootout potential that we've seen in recent weeks. I think the Browns' defense is banged up, but good enough to keep the score kind of in check. And ultimately, there aren't that many pieces of this that I'm really interested in. I'll roll out some Joe Flacco double stacks with Amari Cooper. David Njoku is a great matchup because the Texans allow the 4th most fantasy points to the tight end position. And Njoku's been the tight end 2 in the last 2 weeks back-to-back. Since week 4, he's only had 2 finishes outside of the top 12. But, yeah, I just can't get excited about this game.
No, it feels like it could be a low-scoring affair. The Jerome Ford, it felt like he was going to be a really nice story at the beginning of the year, but lately he's just not getting the volume. Joe Flacco, as you can see on the screen, 133 pass attempts in the last 3 games. He's just passing the ball so much that basically Jerome Ford isn't getting any work at all. And it just feels like, as you said, outside of, you know, essentially the studs, you probably don't want to be reaching and starting in line in this lineup. Another potentially low-scoring affair, it is a juicy matchup for the Jets, but are there any Jets you actually want to start this week?
So, again, we kind of talked about it earlier that players seem to be clearing the concussion protocol slightly quicker than they were to start the season. And if Zach Wilson gets back out there, I'll just feel so much better about Garrett Wilson. I'll feel so much better about Breece Hall. I think, you know, you can kind of, it feels weird saying that because Zach Wilson has been such a painful player, and I don't need to tell you that. But the Commanders, they rank 32nd against the pass. They rank, you know, they've been atrocious against it all season. But as you can see on the screen, Garrett Wilson's had 47 receiving yards in games without Zach Wilson. And in the games with Zach Wilson, it's much closer to like 66, somewhere around that kind of area. That's that right in front of me at the top. So, I'd feel better about starting Wilson if Zach Wilson plays. Breece Hall, I'd probably be happy playing him regardless. I think, you know, last week's RB60 finish was pretty painful. But you look at the kind of the games that Hall's had recently, you know, he's had five finishes of 18 points or more, including like week 14, where he had 26.6 points against the Texans. The Commanders, they do rank worse against the pass than they do against the run. But they've also allowed the eighth most fantasy points to running backs this year. They've allowed eight games where running backs have scored 17 or more points. And since week 10, every week they've played, they've allowed a game of 17 or more points to a running back. So I don't see that stopping here and think that Breece Hall can absolutely have another good week.
Yeah, I think the thing that's saving Breece Hall's value is that receiving work. Like, he's not getting it done on the ground because the offensive line is absolutely horrendous and everybody's injured. But he's getting that reliable, you know, particularly in PPR leagues, receiving production that's helping him kind of keep going. So, I think that's the kind of the saving grace for him there. If you are here, if you want to win more leagues, if you want to get that ship finally in your championship week, hit subscribe. Tom and I will be here over the next few weeks. But more importantly, we'll be back in the off season with more and more content getting you ready for the 2024 season. Moving to the late games now, we got Jacksonville at Tampa Bay. It feels like Trevor Lawrence isn't going to play. Does that change things on how you're attacking this one?
Yeah, if Trevor Lawrence was playing, this would have been the game of the week that I would have been heavily attacking in DFS. I think, as you can see on screen, both teams are top 10 in fantasy points allowed to both the quarterback, wide receiver, and tight end position. Both teams are better against the run than the pass. And if Trevor Lawrence was out there, you could have talked yourself into this one having real fantasy value. I think that without Lawrence, it's definitely a big knock on the Jags. We saw, you know, Calvin Ridley is out there and getting the volume. He's had 25 targets in the last two games. But Robert Mays of The Athletic and Josh Norris of Underdog, they've both talked about this. Calvin Ridley isn't getting plays designed easily for him. He's running these kind of high difficulty routes where he's got to make the ball, catch the ball on the boundary or, you know, deep downfield. Whereas the Jags could really help him out by just bringing some in-breakers into the middle of a field and letting him actually, you know, catch the ball and fall down. I can't remember where I heard. Maybe it was Establish a Run this week talked about how when Calvin Ridley was in Atlanta, he made a living out of catching the ball and falling down with Matt Ryan. Well, let's let him catch the ball and fall down for the Jags. So in another situation, I'd be really excited about Calvin Ridley. With CJ Beathard, I don't think I can be. Evan Engram is coming off the worst performance of the year for him. But Tampa Bay, since week 11, they've allowed three tight ends over 14 points. So I think you can count on him for a bounce back here, even with CJ Beathard. Travis Etienne tweeted this out earlier. Pre-bye week, he was averaging 20.5 PPR points per game. Since then, he's averaging 12.2. It just feels like in the last 2 years, we've seen Travis Etienne fade down the stretch. We saw it last year when after they traded James Robinson, it just didn't seem to, the same burst just didn't seem to be there for Etienne. Maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, I'm not excited about playing him. Chris Godwin, since his wife got on Instagram and launched a bit of a rant against the Bucs, he's had 23 targets in the last two games. And, you know, it was his first 100-plus yard game of the year. He's, yeah, he definitely feels like a more reliable start at this point in the year. I'd start Mike White. I think this isn't a great matchup for Rashad White, but start Mike Evans, but it's not a great matchup for Rashad White. But he's shown that he can get there in games which don't look like good matchups this year, you know, whether it's through the PPR volume of catching passes or whether it's through rushing the ball better than we expected. And then Baker Mayfield, just got to spend a quick minute to just talk about the fact that Baker Mayfield might have been the best value quarterback in fantasy drafts this year. You know, he's scored 16 or more points in 9 games, 18 or more in 7 games. And then now we're talking about the Jags, who've allowed, since week 10, 5 of the 6 quarterbacks they've faced score 18 or more points. The only quarterback below that number was Will Levis, who has been a very up-and-down player. So, yeah, I think you can start Baker Mayfield. I think that there's some sneaky upside in DFS, and I won't be completely ignoring this game.
No, I love Baker. I think there's some really interesting stacking options this week. On the Etienne point, you know, we've talked about it a couple of times now, but part of the reason why he's slowed down from a fantasy perspective is the Jags aren't giving him the whole backfield. You know, before the bye, he was above 80, 90% opportunity share week in, week out. Since the bye, he hasn't cleared 85%. He's last week was his first week above 75% since the bye. It feels like they've sort of tried to rest him for the playoffs. And then all of a sudden they've got to this point where the Texans and the Colts are now catching up the Jags. And it's like, oh, we might don't really necessarily have that easy walk into the playoffs. So I do wonder if we're going to start seeing Etienne get more work, get more usage, and get back to that true three-down bell cow back that he was, you know, weeks 5, 6, 7, 8. And maybe that's where he can start to pay back those people that did draft him in August and September. The next one we're going to talk about is Arizona at Chicago. Is this Justin Fields' week?
It is Justin Fields' week. Absolutely. I think you can have complete confidence starting him here. I think there was a slight worrying trend about the fact that when he returned from injury, he averaged 71% completion rate over the first 2 games back. And then after the bye week, he's averaged 52% over those 2 games. But we can't ignore the fact that he did play the Browns there. So now he's going up against an Arizona side who allow a league-high catch rate to wide receivers. They are bottom 3 in both run defense and pass defense DVOA. They allow the 8th most fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks, have given up 23-point games to both Matthew Stafford and Brock Purdy in the last couple of weeks. I don't think they have enough to be able to stop Justin Fields, who, while Kyler Murray seems to be playing ready to just kind of get back on track after his ACL injury, Justin Fields is playing with a point to prove, and the connection between him and DJ Moore is real. You look at the fact that Arizona ranked 30th in DVOA against wide receiver ones and see the splits which DJ Moore's had in recent weeks when he's played with Justin Fields and without, and it feels absolutely like another explosive game for him. Chicago, they allow the 3rd most fantasy points to tight ends, and now they're coming up against Trey McBride, who's had 2 games outside the top 12 since week 6. He's been excellent. I think those are the reliable pieces of this game, whether you want to go Kyler Murray or whether you want to go Justin Fields. I think you have to stack them with DJ Moore and Trey McBride, and that's it. Because Marquise Brown can't get healthy. Over the last 2 weeks, he's had 52% snaps and 32% snaps. He had 3 targets in week 13 for 0 catches. Last week, he had 0 targets. So there is no way you can trust him. The other receiving options outside him, yes, okay, it's fun to take dart throws on Rondale Moore, Michael Wilson, but neither of them have been particularly doing anything. We might just about pay off their salary in DFS, but they're not giving you ceiling outcomes. And then on the Bears side of thing, the running back room is now a 3-way committee, which we don't want any part of. Cole Kmet has his usable weeks, and I think he's fine, but I would prefer to play Trey McBride in this game. And then just going back to Chicago and how bad they are against tight ends, both David Njoku and TJ Hockenson have gone over 14 points against them in the last couple of weeks. So it just feels like a complete smash spot for Trey McBride.
Yeah, Trey McBride, as I tweeted out early in the week, now my dynasty tight end one. I'm all about the McBride bandwagon, leading the league in targets per route run at the tight end position and yards per route run. Despite the fact that he's basically hardly scored touchdowns, I think he could be due for some big regression on that side. heading into next year. And I think he's, yeah, a true fantasy superstar, going to be here for years to come. Stephen's in the chat, needs to sit one of these. So it's Aaron Jones, Breece Hall, Kyren Williams, Davante Adams, Cooper Kupp, DK Metcalf. That's sit Davante Adams for me.
Yeah, so Davante Adams would be the layup one. Second choice, it gets tricky because obviously
it would be Aaron Jones would be my second choice. I think Kyren Williams, Cooper Kupp, DK this week are all must starts.
Yeah, I can get on board with that because I think even though I like Aaron Jones and I think he probably scores a touchdown this week, we saw last week even when he gets volume, sometimes it's not going to produce the biggest fantasy performances. Whereas I feel like there's more ceiling with Breece Hall, Kyren Williams, Cooper Kupp, and DK Metcalf.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the next question we've got here from Gabrielle saying, "Oh, flex one, Puka, Mixon, Higgins."
Oh, it's Puka, hands down, easily. Like, Puka has been the... Yeah. I mean, I like T. Higgins, but Puka and Matthew Stafford are just in beautiful form at the minute.
Can I be controversial and say I think I'd lean Joe Mixon here? I think just the great matchup, potential touchdown options. He's been balling the last few weeks. I'd lean Joe Mixon. We're going to move across now, though, to the highest over-under on the Sunday slate. It feels like there's some fairly mediocre games, but this is going to be juicy. Dallas, the wounded Dallas Cowboys coming off that embarrassing loss, going up against Miami. How are you attacking this slate? Is this one that you're going to try and get as many of those options in as possible in DFS lineups, or is it going to be too chalky and one you want to avoid?
It's tricky because we haven't had many 50-point over-under games this year, and this feels like one which could definitely hit the over on the over-under. But what was kind of easy to project earlier on in the season was the fact that Miami's defense was poor, but over the last five games, they've been top five in both run and pass defense. It's really been quite a turnaround for them, and now what they should be doing as a team is seeing what the Bills did against the Cowboys last week and going, okay, we can run on this team, and the Cowboys don't seem to have an answer to it. And now we're going to face one of the most creative run games in the league who use motion to greater effect than just about anybody. So, yeah, I think this is a game where you can start Raheem Mostert and you can start Devon Achane with good amount of confidence. Raheem Mostert now has more touchdowns this season than he had in his NFL career prior to this season. And that's a season that goes back to like 2015. Like, it's kind of mad the fact that he'd been around the team, been around the NFL for so long, been on some high-powered offenses, and just wasn't a touchdown scorer. And now he's having his version of a Jamal Williams season where he's just, everything he touches ends up in the end zone. I think that if you're in a semifinal game and you've got Tyreek, you absolutely have to play him because the team really want him to get this 2,000 yards record, and he only needs 150 per game to break that record. He's got games against the Cowboys, the Ravens, and the Bills to end the season. There are no easy games. He needs to get out there and he needs to start accumulating them. And then on the other side of this, I really like Dak Prescott this week. I think you can start him with confidence. And then you can see on screen, in DVOA, Miami ranked 27th against wide receiver ones and 26th versus tight ends. That, to me, just screams out the two areas of the Cowboys' passing game which have been reliable, CeeDee Lamb, Jake Ferguson. So I think you can look at that kind of Dak stack and run it back with Raheem Mostert or Devon Achane if you want to. But Jalen Waddle, I don't think we're going to see the kind of performance that we did last week. I think, you know, his splits with and without Tyreek Hill are going to be pretty obviously very favorable to him. And there's nobody else. You know, the Miami game is very condensed. Tua hasn't been a particularly fantasy great quarterback this year. He's fine for super flex leagues, but you more often than not don't want to start him in single quarterback leagues.
Yeah, I think for me, I may be overthinking this, Tom, okay? But bear with me for 2 minutes here. Dallas, we know that the way that you can get after this Dallas defense, they've got an incredible pass rush. They've got some ball-hawking, aggressive corners. And the way you get after them is you run the ball up the middle because they don't have that run-stuffing, two-gapping, nose-tackle, whether you want to call it an eye, a three-eye or a one technique. But you'd look at it and you'd go, Miami is a great rushing offense. Dallas struggle against the run. Miami's going to run the ball all over them. But where Dallas struggles is up the middle, okay? Miami run the ball more to the edges than any other part of the field. So they run to the left. They've run so far this year to the left edge, so outside the tight end to the left, 69 times. They've run outside the tight end to the right 67 times. They've only run the ball up the middle 39 times this year. I think that that is where the Cowboys' run defense is at its strongest. You've got DeMarcus Lawrence, who is one of the best run defending defensive ends in the league, and you've got Micah Parsons. So I don't know if I'm overthinking this, but I don't think this is a particularly great rush matchup for Mostert and Achane. And I wonder if maybe we can get away from them this week and look at other options.
So, I mean, I'm just going to share, this is Next Gen Stats on Twitter. This is James Cook last week and his rushing yards. So yeah, absolutely take your point. And you can see kind of across the middle there are plenty of runs up the middle and he didn't have as much success with him. Where he made the success was kind of getting out to the edges. So I think it's a completely valid point. I'm just not sure that Mike McDaniels is going to find ways to manipulate it in favor of what they do well.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? Is that perhaps we're looking back to what they were doing with that chain earlier in the season where they were using him on jet sweeps and motions and getting him in space rather than traditional run concepts that we would expect. If you're here and you want to get Tom's DFS deep dive, all you've got to do is there's a little button below, you hit join, you get to come and join us in the Discord, you get access to all of Tom's DFS content, you get access to all of my Dynasty content, and it is official today. I started compiling the rookie guide. Last year was 171 pages. It was very detailed, 100 player write-ups. I feel like this year is probably going to be bigger and better. I've already set myself targets to start and work that I think it could be even bigger this year. So hit that join button. It is so cheap and one of the best values in the fantasy world you will find. The Sunday night game, I feel like we can just skip over this one, Tom. New England at Denver. How this hasn't been flexed out of prime time, I don't know. But is it a case of start Russ, start Cortland Sutton, and that's it?
I think you possibly talk yourself out of Cortland Sutton if you wanted to, because the Patriots, something we've talked about a lot this year, the Patriots have been quite good against wide receiver ones. They rank second best in DVOA against the position. But on the whole, their pass defense is 21st. And again, they're another team that just looks to have their flip-flops on and they're ready for the, you know, they're ready for the beach. They're ready to go to Cabo. Where the Patriots have been good this year is run defense DVOA. They lead the league in run defense DVOA. And I think it's a very straightforward decision for me to sit Javonte Williams. He's seen his opportunity share decrease for four straight weeks. Last week, he had 27 rush yards at 2.3 yards per carry. Samaje Perine isn't startable, despite what my best ball shares this offseason might have hoped. And Jaleel McLaughlin hasn't really done an awful lot for a little while now. In terms of the passing game, yeah, Jerry Jeudy is not somebody that we want to start. I think you can look at Cortland Sutton and say, okay, he might get a touchdown and that might get him there. But if I've got a better option, I'm probably taking it because 34.5 over-under in this game, it's not enticing. New England, they've allowed 120-point quarterback game in the last six. That's a period where they faced Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes. And one quarterback who scored over 20 points against him was Mitch Trubisky. So Russell Wilson, he's averaging 16.3 points per game over the last eight, and he's been quite reliable. But this just kind of feels like a situation where it might not be that great for fantasy. So yeah, generally I'm trying to avoid it. The Broncos, on paper, they've allowed the second most fantasy points to the running back position. But we talked last week about how that's massively inflated by the 70-point game against the Dolphins earlier on in the season. Since week six, they've actually been pretty good against the position. And Zeke, he had 16 touches last week, but it only turned into 9 points. So I don't think you can start Zeke with any confidence. I'm in the Dynasty semifinal where I was facing starting Zeke this week, and I just decided, you know what, I'd rather mortgage the future slightly and go out and trade a first to get Kyren Williams. So maybe that backfires on me and Zeke has a fantastic week, but I'm willing to die by the sword on Kyren Williams being a better option.
Well, I think it was a good trade. I like the trade for you the second as it came through. So yeah, no, I'm in full agreement with you there. If you've been watching, if you're watching this, you've got to this point, we're an hour in, but you've still got questions. You don't quite know who to start. You don't know what to do with your trades. Get them in the comments below. Tom and I will be answering every single one of your comments, every single one of your questions up until the weekend's action, whether it be start sits, trade advice, strategy questions, or you just want to know what beer Tom is drinking. Get them in the comments below and we will get them answered. Moving across to Christmas Day, the gift that keeps on giving. Las Vegas at Kansas City. Can we trust the Chiefs players at all?
I don't know if we can, to be honest. I mean, I think we're just living in a lower ceiling world for the Chiefs these days. I think you look at Patrick Mahomes and he just isn't a lock to be a top eight quarterback week in, week out. Travis Kelce, he's just not getting it done in the same way that he used to. He's only had 7 top 5 finishes this year. You think about the Travis Kelce of previous years, and even if he wasn't tight end one, he was in that realm. Like, he was rarely outside of top 4 tight ends. And this season, there are just a lot more weeks where it feels like the cost you paid for Travis Kelce isn't being paid off. He scored a touchdown in one of the last 5 games against the Raiders. That wasn't a game where he scored 4 touchdowns against them. So perhaps there's nothing particularly sticky that we can read into that. But this Raiders defense has been kind of plucky at times this year. You know, they allow the 10th most fantasy points to the running back position, but otherwise they allow the 24th most to quarterbacks, the 20th most to wide receivers, and the 17th most to tight ends. They haven't been pushovers in the same way that we probably expected them to. So, yeah, I think you can start Rashee Rice, though. I mean, week 1 to 11, he averaged 3.7 touches per game. Weeks 12 to 15, he's averaging 8.0 per game, and he's been a top 24 wide receiver for 4 straight games. So Rashee Rice is now an every-week starter for me, which is more I can say for Devante Adams, who's averaging 6.75 catches over the last 4 games. But he's kind of living in that wide receiver 3 territory area. And there are definitely points where I look at it and go, okay, I'm not sure I really love this matchup. The Chiefs have been top 5 against wide receiver 1s in DVOA this year. Their pass defense ranks 5th best. They just aren't a team who have been giving up a lot of yardage through the air. So, yeah, it's tricky. You always want to start the Chiefs, but they just haven't really earned the trust in the same way that they used to.
No, I think it's a case. You still got to start Mahomes. You still got to start Kelce, but they're just not going to put up what they've put up over the last 3-4 years. And then Pacheco and Rice, I think, are good options now, good reliable options. But that's it. It's not, they don't have that kind of secondary receiver. They don't have that tertiary option that you can kind of bank on for elite fantasy production, which is a sad place to be for a Chiefs offense that, let's be honest, has carried a lot of teams over the last 3-4 years. Moving on to the second game on the I've almost said Thanksgiving there, Christmas Day slate. This is just as you're starting to feel tired. You're going to get hit in the face. New York Giants at the Eagles. The Eagles feel like they've been beaten up a little bit. They've been, you know, dragged over the coals. Jalen Hurts is being talked up as, you know, whether he's a bad leader, whether he's I saw today that the Eagles have let him down and haven't built around him enough, which I thought was, yeah, humorous.
They literally traded for AJ Brown.
This to me feels like this could be an absolute blow up week for the Eagles, where they just unleash everything on a very sorry Giants defense.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of have to remember that Jalen Hurts played through the flu last week, and I think sometimes as men, we are tarnished with this idea that, you know, any kind of cough or cold, oh, it's man flu. But like, I've had the flu, and the flu was worse for me than having COVID. And the idea of going out there and playing a physical game and doing what he did, yes, the passing game was bad. Last week, he had 13 for 82 and two touchdowns on the ground. And he earned 20 of his 21.2 fantasy points from his rushing production. He had 149 through the air and two interceptions. Like, he just wasn't getting it done. But, and I'm willing to make an excuse for Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts has been fantastic for a large portion of the season. I have more concerns over AJ Brown, who's had eight finishes of wide receiver 13 or worse. He hasn't been a top 10 wide receiver since week 9. Meanwhile, Devonta Smith's had back-to-back games with fewer than 11 points. Dallas Goedert, four straight games at eight or fewer fantasy points. Two top 12 finishes all year. I don't think you'd start Dallas Goedert. I don't think that I'd want to start Devonta Smith, but I will be starting him in a couple of places. So really, for me, this just comes back to the Eagles haven't performed well. And why is that? Well, okay, well, they lost their offensive coordinator, didn't they? You know, they also, on defense, their passing defense specialist now works with Ravens and is being credited with one of the reasons why the Ravens allowing like a league low in yards per attempt. So there are lots of kind of little bits that come into it that are tricky. You know, sustained success in the NFL is difficult, but the Giants, yeah, they're a team that you never know really what you're going to get from week to week. Saquon Barkley at 6,800. I don't know if I could bring myself to play him. Darren Waller had four catches for 40 yards last week on his first game back in months. The Eagles, they allow the 13th most fantasy points to the tight end position. But generally, I just kind of feel okay fading this game. You know, maybe I'll lean into it a bit. Perhaps we see DeAndre Swift have a good game for the first time in ages, or perhaps, yeah, we do see the Eagles go nuclear. But it just feels like this doesn't have the same kind of spice that I would hope it would.
Yeah, and any interest in, you know, we know the Eagles are pretty horrendous against wide receivers. Any interest in any Wandale Robinson or perhaps Darius Slayton?
Not particularly, no. I think, you know, we saw Wandale Robinson, he had that big game, and then automatically last week in a spot where it's like, okay, well, just show us something. The Saints secondary were banged up and he had four catches for 25 yards, like, you know, a week after having 115. You look at Darius Slayton and his production all season has been pretty patchy. I'm not sure that, yeah, you know, 63 yards last week, week before 14, the week before 16, the week before 82. Like, that kind of production is not easy going whatsoever. Jalen Hyatt, you know, we're past the bye week. You know, we like to see these rookies getting more involved and having big games as the season ends. Jalen Hyatt last week had zero touches, the week before two touches for 13 yards, the week before 109 yards. So perhaps this is just, you know, the Tommy DeVito experience and we're in his world and we have to accept it and live with it. But I just don't think that there are any Giants who are startable. If I was playing a showdown slate for this game, I would be playing five Eagles players to one Giants player, and that's only because DraftKings force you to play one Giants player.
And Rob in the chat, Tom, he wants to know, where's your Christmas jumper and your Christmas hat?
It's a fair question. I'll tell you what, for the DFS video this weekend, I will bring it back.
I've got a Christmas t-shirt on, but I got cold, so I put a hoodie on. So sorry, Rob. But, yeah.
Heating costs money. If you want to help us and support us, hit the subscribe button.
Right. I feel like I've just got, one of those Duracell bunnies. I've just got to wind you up and let you go here, Tom. Final game on Christmas Day, Baltimore at San Francisco. Away you go.
I mean, this has the potential on paper to be the game of the season, doesn't it? It's like you look at all the kind of things that the 49ers do well. They are elite with pre-snap motion. They're elite at play action, elite at zone running, and elite at screen game. Well, guess what? The Ravens defense is elite in all those categories. So the Ravens might be the first defense who've come up against Niners who could actually cancel them out in those regards. I think that Debo Samuel, he's been absolutely on fire since week 10, averaging 93 yards per game, being a top 12 wide receiver in four straight. There are certain defensive coverages that Ravens use which could play into the kind of looks where Debo Samuel goes off. But the Ravens defense, they don't really have one. You have certain defenses in the league where you're like, okay, they're a man coverage, they're a zone coverage, they play cover two, they play cover six. The Ravens don't really do that. Mike McDonald really keeps things very fresh and cycles through a lot of different looks a lot of the time. So, yeah, I mean, this game, though, it's the two MVP favorites. Brock Purdy is the odds-on favorite at the minute, and then Lamar is the next closest. I think if Lamar goes out there and passes all over on the Niners secondary, which has been slightly vulnerable this year, I mean, they allow the 12 most fantasy points to wide receivers. Their pass defense ranks fourth best, but they have been vulnerable to those kind of outside receiver looks. Then Lamar is going to be way in the conversation again. CMC, this Ravens defense, they have been worse against the run in recent weeks. They've given up yardage. I don't know whether it's because they're tired or whether it's slight little injuries and they're dropping more into coverage to compensate for certain things. But I feel like CMC could absolutely go nuclear if he wants. So, yeah, I think you start everyone on the Ravens side. You look at it and go, okay, Isaiah Likely's been a top five tight end in back-to-back weeks. Zay Flowers, we saw in a couple of games without Mark Andrews, he becomes a bit of a target hog, and he was the wide receiver 8. And then last week against the Jags, he was wide receiver 101 overall. It was really disappointing. But he was open. He was still getting open. Rashad Bateman, I hate talking about Rashad Bateman at this point in the season. But Rashad Bateman had a couple of really nice plays early on in the game. And sooner or later, variants would say he's probably going to get in the end zone. Sunday night football, whenever it is, I've lost track of days. But Odell Beckham has a habit of popping up in these games. The two kind of question marks on either side of the ball for me. Gus Edwards, he's going to be back in a big role after Keaton Mitchell tore his ACL. He's only rushed for over 3.7 yards per carry once in the last five games. And for the last few years, Gus Edwards has absolutely had a habit of rushing for over 5 yards per carry. There's various stats out there about how highly he ranks historically against other running backs for just picking up yardage. And I just worry he doesn't really have the juice and that against this Niners front defensive line, he might not have success. What they need is that player who has that burst, who can get outside. So Gus, I don't feel great about. And then George Kittle, he's either finishes like as a top 7 tight end or he finishes like tight end 20, tight end 23. The Ravens, they've allowed 3 tight ends to score touchdowns all year. So it doesn't feel particularly like this is one that sets up well for him. But every time I think about George Kittle ends up kind of going off. So, yeah, I think this is a game where on the showdown slate on Christmas Day after being the designated driver during the day, I'll get home in the evening and then I'll sit down, crack open some whiskey and come up with 20 or so lineups to throw into some showdown slates and sit back and enjoy.
Well, I genuinely cannot wait to watch this game. I think it's going to be absolutely fascinating. Harry's asking if Lamar goes off, does he become the MVP favourite? I'll be honest, I'm not a gambling man, but I can't understand how Lamar's not the MVP favourite.
Well, so it's kind of weird. Like you get into trouble on Twitter at a minute for saying this, but EPA is apparently the most indicative stat about what dictates who becomes the MVP every year. And Lamar is never going to do well in that stat because Lamar as a passer isn't going to shine in EPA. He did in 2019, but like it's just not the way he plays. And Brock Purdy is the kind of player who is going to shine in EPA. And I get it. Brock Purdy, I think, has been fantastic. And I really like Brock Purdy. Like, my Trey Lance bias does not play in whatsoever when it comes to Brock Purdy. But yeah, I think you look at Lamar, and I saw it put quite well earlier on Twitter. If you put Brock Purdy on the Ravens, they'd be lucky to be 500. If you put Lamar Jackson on the 49ers, they'd never lose a game.
Yeah, absolutely. After all, EPA is an offense stat, not a quarterback stat, and nobody seems to ever understand
Sing
that.
It.
But that concludes it for the whole week of slate. I wish you the very best of luck in your semi-final matchups. Let's hope Tom and I have got a couple of best balls teams still in. We can bring home some cash and have a very, very Merry Christmas. Best of luck all. And I hope Santa's good for you with some fancy titles this week.